Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Happy Prejanmashtami, everyone. Tonight is Tuesday, August 31st, and all is well. And tonight is the evening before Krishna Janmashtami. So I wish you all a happy Janmashtami. And I have a song. Do you have the link? We have a song for you. Many years ago, not many, but maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I took the words which Kalakanta had written about the birth of Lord Krishna, which he had taken from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and which he had turned into poetry, and I took those words and I put them to music. It's about a 10-minute song that describes, based on the verses of the Bhagavatam, the birth of Lord Krishna. And so that's going to be my Janmashtami present to you all. And I sent this file to you, send it. It may take you 5 or 10 minutes to download it, but it's worth waiting. And you'll see down there on the bottom, there is the link. And I'll mention this a few times during the show for those who come late. You're all getting rewarded now for coming early. And if you're not on the chat, what do they do if they're not on the chat? Because they want to know the link. Today's August 31st. I think that link is only good for 2 weeks, unless you're going to put it, are you? Maybe get it up on Krishna.com? Tomorrow. Look for it on Krishna.com tomorrow. It's called The Birth of Lord Krishna. And if you're listening to the audio version of this class, then hopefully it will be permanently up there for posterity's sake, and you can access it. It's called The Birth of Lord Krishna. It's a nice song. It's no one's ever heard, only about 5 devotees have ever heard it. And Kalakanta Prabhu is a great poet, and he has described all the details of Krishna's birth. And one of the details, since we're talking about the mind, is that everyone was very peaceful. Everyone was, their minds were very calm when Krishna, that evening when Krishna took birth. So because it was the most, all the constellations were very auspicious. So, we are talking about the mind, and I don't know if I told you a story, but if I did, I will tell you again, and if you are hearing it for the second time, let me know, because that means I'm getting old and I can't remember what I said a few weeks ago. But it's a very nice story, so in any case, I think it's worth repeating, and those who haven't heard it, like Edgar was here, I don't think Edgar has been here before. And Edgar will get to hear it for the first time if you have heard it already. So there's a lady, I won't mention her name, I don't think she would like me to, although I would like to because she's wonderful. And she is from India, and she got a job in Sudan, or Sudan. How do you pronounce it? Sudan? Sudan, depends where you're from. And after 2 weeks in Sudan, she wanted to go back to India, and she was going to her office to tell them that it's too difficult for her. And the reason it was so difficult for her, because there's so much poverty, and there's so much disease, and she'd never seen anything like it, and it was very, very difficult for her to see that every day. She's getting very depressed. And it was basically intolerable for her just to see the extensive poverty and the extensive suffering that was existing there. So she's on her way back to her office, and she's walking with her head down because the sun is so strong, so she's kind of keeping the sun off her face. And as she's walking, she sees a little matchbox on the ground. But the interesting thing about the matchbox, it's got a picture of Krishna on it. She picks it up and she's thinking, Krishna, he knows that I'm suffering, and now he's coming to me in my suffering. And she actually had a transformation by thinking of Krishna in that situation and thinking that Krishna somehow or other was appearing to her in order to pacify her or to encourage her or to some way calm her down. And it changed her. And she decided to stay. And she stayed for 2 years, and you know, everything was fine. She did her work, and I think she said she was part of a team who had immunized 3.8 million people. So she was happy that she stayed, and then she wrote me, and she said something which I thought was so nice. She said, "Krishna is only one thought away." I thought, wow, that's wonderful. Krishna's never more than one thought away. Now, let me ask you, did I tell you that story before? You remember? Yes, I did. See, I'm getting old. I can't remember. I can remember my name. That's pretty good, right? I can remember to come here every Tuesday night. I'm still doing okay. I can remember to talk. So, but I thought that was so nice, that Krishna is only one thought away. Now that we're talking about the mind, last week when Narayani Mataji was here, she was mentioning how one of the functions of the mind is to accept and reject. And I was also thinking, and I think we mentioned this also, another aspect of the mind is to become absorbed. And have you ever become absorbed in thinking about something? I think one of the ways we become absorbed is when something bothers us. It's very, very disturbing. The mind tends to fixate on it. Or if somebody's done something that's upsetting, the mind tends to fixate on the person and how much we don't like what they did or how much we don't like them. So you can see the nature of the mind is to get absorbed, and it can very easily get absorbed. People who worry can very easily get absorbed in their worries, most of which are not worth worrying about, because they can't control it anyway, and most of the things we worry about never happen. But you see the nature of the mind is to become absorbed. So Srila Prabhupada would often tell us that the point of Krishna consciousness, or the goal of Krishna consciousness, is to become absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Or sometimes he would say, always think of the lotus feet of Krishna. But the concept of absorption is important, because I think for most of us who are practicing bhakti, the concept of being absorbed in thinking of Krishna is a lofty goal. But nevertheless, that's what we're supposed to be shooting for. And Srila Prabhupada instructs us, or hopes, that we will come to the point where we're always thinking of Krishna. Just like Krishna says, "Man mana," always think of me. Not sometimes, not just when we're in distress or when we want something, or right after a Sunday feast when we're feeling really good, after that sugar starts entering our blood. Not just then, but always. So that's a tall order, to always think of Krishna. Especially because we didn't come into the material world, to always think of Krishna. Rather, we came here. Why do we come here? Not man-mana, but basically came here to think about ourselves. Me-mana, not man-mana. Mama means no. So we can say me-mana. We came to think about ourselves, to push ourselves to a higher position, to put ourselves in the center, to push Krishna out. So in the effort to become absorbed in thinking of Krishna, naturally, there's going to be some stumbling blocks, because we're not habituated to do that. And, of course, we know that ultimately you can only think about something or someone if there is strong attraction, because that's what we tend to think about the most, either what we're strongly attracted to or strongly repulsed by. And that's why you have stories in Srimad Bhagavatam of demons, asuras, people who are against God, who were always thinking of Krishna because they hated him, because they were envious of him, because they didn't like him. And because they didn't like him, some of them wanted to kill him. And because they wanted to kill him, naturally they hated him with such vengeance, all they could do was think about him, like Kamsa. Kamsa was so much in anxiety that the eighth child of Devaki would kill him. that when he finally found out who was the eighth child, because it was kind of a trick that was, we should say, the wool was pulled over his eyes. It wasn't really clear. When he finally figured it out, then he did everything he could to try to kill Krishna. And therefore, he was always thinking about Krishna. He was absorbed. He was actually absorbed in thinking about Krishna. He was so absorbed in thinking about Krishna that once Narada Muni prayed to Krishna and said, I'm not even as absorbed in thinking of you as was Kamsa. So sometimes when there's repulsion, there's strong meditation on the object that repulses us. But of course, for us as devotees, attraction is the process for thinking of Krishna. But, so how do we think of Krishna? Then, the natural question is, well, I'm not attracted. I'm not a pure devotee. I have attraction to so many things. I mean, so many attractive things in this world. So how is it possible to always think of Krishna if I'm not attracted? Well, there are ways to do it. Well, one of the ways that Prabhupada advised us, one of the many ways, is if we make the effort to see the world through the eyes of Scripture, and that would mean to see the world and see how everything is somewhat, in some way, connected to Krishna. So, if you see things philosophically, you'll tend to see everything in relation to Krishna. If you ever listen to any morning walks that Srila Prabhupada was on, you will find that often he will connect things to Krishna that perhaps maybe we wouldn't normally connect. But something, somewhere will remind us of Krishna. Recently I was in Guyana, and this time of year in Guyana, there are lotus flowers growing everywhere. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kunti glorifies Krishna in that he has eyes like a lotus, feet like a lotus, cheeks like a lotus, abdomen like a lotus, hands like lotus. And there are other verses, maybe not only Kunti, but other verses, which describe different parts of Krishna's body, not just his eyes or his feet, but other parts of his body like lotuses. So when Prabhupada was lecturing on the verse by Kunti, which described different parts of Krishna's body, or made the analogy of Krishna, different parts of Krishna's body to the lotus flower, then Prabhupada said, turn on the tape here, and Prabhupada said, when you see a lotus flower, it reminds you of Krishna. Well, who does it remind of Krishna? Not everybody. But still, Prabhupada was showing how we as devotees can think of Krishna if we allow certain things to remind us of Krishna. So ever since I heard that, then when I don't get to see a lot of lotus flowers, because you don't see a lot of lotus flowers, or I don't know, on Uddhava, do you see lotus flowers in Florida? No, you don't really see them. So, you know, in certain countries you'll see them, and it's kind of rare. So I always remember that. So when I was in Guyana a few weeks ago and I saw the lotus flowers, I said that Prabhupada said, when you see the lotus, it reminds you of Krishna. So if you're a devotee, if you're actually a devotee, or if you're a serious sadhaka, then when you see the lotus flower, what will you think? The petal, the nice lotus petal, which is shaped like this, kind of, comes to a point. You think, oh yes, Krishna has eyes, like lotus petals, right? Big wide eyes, like lotus petals. And his feet are pinkish and soft like the lotus petals. So you begin to deal with Krishna as a person and think of the different parts of his personal form. That's one way to get absorbed in thinking of Krishna. As Prabhupada said, we should be absorbed, we should always take shelter and think of the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's one way to think when you see lotus flower. So what are some other ways to get absorbed in thinking of Krishna? Many times I've told you that Prabhupada said one way to get absorbed in thinking of Krishna is to feel helpless in your service, or to feel helpless in whatever you're doing. And in that feeling of helplessness, you just cry out to Krishna, you depend on Krishna, so you make a connection with Krishna in your helplessness. Krishna, please help me. So in that way, essentially you're constantly thinking of Krishna because you're leaning on him, because you don't feel qualified in and of yourself to do whatever it is that you have to do. And even, Prabhupada said, if you feel that you can do it, still you should feel that you can't do it unless Krishna helps you, and thus continually be dependent on Krishna, because that way you'll think of him. So I find this is not difficult to do if we just depend on Krishna. Even every morning when you're chanting your rounds, you can begin, "Oh Krishna, please help me. Help me with my mind. Help me control my mind. Help me chant my rounds. Help me improve my chanting. Help me become absorbed." You can pray to the holy name to help you chant the holy name. So in this way, in a helpless condition or feeling helpless or unqualified, we tend to depend more on Krishna for his help or for his guidance or for his motivation, for his inspiration. Sometimes we're not inspired. "Krishna, help me, please. Please help me become inspired." So in that dependence, we can easily become absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Or at least, maybe not absorbed, but at least it's easier to think of him. So we're looking at the world through the eye of Scripture. We're looking at the world philosophically. We're trying to see how things are in relation to Krishna. That's Krishna's tree. That's Krishna's sky. Perhaps we're looking at the world from the angle of the universal form. We see the sun. Krishna says, "I am the light of the sun, Prabhasmi Sashi Suryayo, and the light of the moon." So we're always seeing the sun, but how many times when we see the sun do we think, "Oh, Krishna's the light of the sun," or "that is Krishna's eye"? We don't always think that way, but Prabhupada said, well, that's another way to think of Krishna, by thinking of things Krishna has said about the things which we are constantly contacting. Sun being one of them, the moon being another, water being another. Krishna says, "Rasoham apsukunteya," "I'm the taste of water." We drink water every day. Do we think of Krishna every time we drink water? I don't know. I don't. And here I am telling you that you should, and I don't even. So actually, I'm talking to myself, and you just happen to be listening, but I'm really telling myself, "Mahatma, get it together. You're drinking water. So many times a day we're drinking water. That taste is Krishna. We're seeing the sun. That is Krishna. We're seeing trees, plants. These are all Krishna's plants." Or another thing a Prabhupada said, when you see a flower, that's Krishna's artistry. Or any beauty in nature, it's Krishna's artistry. Right? So you can see, "Oh, Krishna, he's such a nice artist." And then when you see anyone who has ability, I tend to find it easy to see Krishna when I see especially talented people. Because when I see someone who's so talented to the point where I can't really conceive of ever doing what that person is doing, then I think, this is mystical. Of course, Prabhupada said, you know, there's nothing really magical or mystical. He said, magical or mystical just means that you can't understand how to do it. Still, anything that I see magical or mystical because I can't understand how to do it, then I think Krishna. Krishna's the ability, because Krishna has given this person, who is, I would say, I don't like to demean the person and say they're ordinary, but you know what I mean, just another person on this planet, but Krishna has given some special shakti, some special power to do something wonderful, to play an instrument wonderfully, to perform athletically wonderfully, or he's given someone incredible intelligence or beautiful voice or whatever it may be. And or sometimes just when I see somebody that's really funny, I think, yes, Krishna, he has a wonderful sense of humor. It reminds me, if you if you look at Krishna's pastimes, they're always joking. He and the cowherd boys are always joking, and the gopis are always joking. And so often I'm reminded of Krishna's joking when I see another person's joking. I don't know if you know the story, but Prabhupada was on an airplane and a Charlie Chaplin movie came on and he watched the whole thing. Do you know that? Do you know that? So what do you think the devotee sitting next to him was thinking? Why is Prabhupada watching Charlie Chaplin? And he asked him, should I tell you what he said? Prabhupada said, his humor is original. So I can only think that what Prabhupada meant by original is that it reminded him of Krishna's humor, because Krishna is the original comedian, isn't he? He's the original everything, so whatever he does, he's the origin of it. So in some way it must have reminded Prabhupada of Krishna's humor. And so he watched it. I don't know if that's an endorsement to go out and watch Charlie Chaplin movies. I don't even know if you'd want to watch them. But anyway, that somehow or other, it appears, was reminding Srila Prabhupada in some way of the humor of Krishna. So the point is we're trying to connect everything to Krishna and to remembering Krishna, or to remembering Krishna's instructions, because remembering his instructions, Prabhupada said, is also the same as remembering Krishna. Now, you may think, well, I don't know, it's difficult to always think of Krishna's pastimes. That's true. So we have his instructions. Or, of course, we have his name, another way to remember him. And we can meditate on his service. Another thing that Srila Prabhupada taught us as a very powerful way of remembering Krishna was to give Krishna to others. And sometimes he said we should use our minds to plan how to spread Krishna consciousness. He said that would absorb the mind. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam he also said something that I always found very interesting. He said that it is naturally easier to be Krishna conscious if we are telling other people about Krishna, telling other people about Krishna consciousness. And if you think about it, I don't know, of course, I don't know how many of you out there have the opportunity to tell other people about Krishna. But what happens when you tell someone about Krishna is that it definitely fixes your mind on Krishna, because you have to clearly think what you want to say, and then you have to clearly express it, and in doing so you are very absorbed in thinking of Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada said that it can be difficult to become Krishna conscious, but if you're always telling others about Krishna, it's much easier. So that may include a parent telling their child, friends talking about Krishna consciousness together. It doesn't only mean telling someone who knows nothing about Krishna, but it means talking about Krishna, discussing Krishna, and taking opportunities to tell whoever about Krishna. Tell your friends your realizations. You see a little young devotee, tell them about Krishna. Or even, you can do this, and it doesn't mean you're crazy if you do this, but I've done this. This is how one of the ways that I learned to become a teacher of Krishna consciousness is that I would teach the philosophy of Krishna consciousness when nobody was around. I would just speak it. I would give lectures. And even though there was nobody there, I felt as Krishna conscious as if I were speaking to a crowd of people. So it had two benefits. That's how I learned to teach Krishna consciousness, learn to be able to express the philosophy clearly or clarify my understanding of Krishna consciousness. But it also helped me become more Krishna conscious. So speaking about Krishna is a very powerful way to remember Krishna. Very powerful, very effective. Sometimes I want to meet someone or I want to give a class so I can teach about Krishna consciousness. And sometimes I have to admit, I don't even care if they get it or not, because sometimes I feel like I just need to talk about it for my own upliftment. Not that I don't care if they don't get it, but sometimes my motive is more for my own purification than it is for anyone else's, or at least equally as much for my own as it is for theirs. Because I recognize the power of speaking about Krishna. It's one of the 9 processes of bhakti, one of the most important, and one of the easiest ways to become absorbed in Krishna. If you like to tell stories, tell them. Read about Krishna Leela and tell it to everybody. It will absorb your mind. So, that's another way. What other way can we think of Krishna? We can learn verses from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or other places. We can recite those verses to ourselves. We can recite those verses to others. Many devotees like to memorize verses. And memorizing verses is very absorbing. And it's very purifying. I don't know if you've ever done it, but if you haven't, I would suggest, even if you don't have verses memorized, sometimes when you have a chance, if not every day, chant verses. Like chant a chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, or a chapter of the Bhagavatam, or chant a group of verses that you like. It's very amazing the effect it has on you. Very, very powerful way to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And you might think, well, I'm just chanting the verse, I may not even know what the verse means, and how is that not becoming absorbed? Well, just try it and you'll see. Even you don't understand the meaning, of course we should understand the meaning, we don't just want to chant like a parrot, but still the verses are powerful when chanted, and they're very purifying. And the more we're purified, naturally, more easily we can think of Krishna. Now, who can think, okay, I'm going to throw this out to you. I've given about 4 or 5 ways. Can anybody suggest some other ways that will help us become absorbed in thinking of Krishna? Okay, I'm going to read you what you're writing, what you're chatting about while you come up with your answers, okay? Aman Jesh is saying, this is something that comes spontaneously, or can we train ourselves? I think everything in the beginning is training. And then from the training, spontaneity comes. Now, what I find, if you were born a devotee, there's a little more spontaneity there, because it's kind of who you are. It's what you've always known. So you can actually fall back on what you've always known. Still, in any case, training is always part of the program, training the mind. And Prabhupada uses that phrase, train the mind. The mind needs to be trained, because the mind goes in certain directions, and we all come into this world with a certain type of mind, certain disposition, certain past karma, due to some scars or impressions in our heart. So Edgar says, the best way is to ask Krishna to show you how to think of him always. Yeah, that's wonderful. Prayer. So I think we could summarize that as prayer. Yeah, Krishna and Edgar saying that Krishna will inspire you because he sees that you're anxious to serve him. Yeah. So let's categorize that as prayer. We mentioned that a little bit, but we can elaborate on that. Praying to Krishna to allow us to think of him. Prabhupada once wrote a devotee and said that you should pray to Krishna, always help me remember to chant your name, and always help me never to forget to chant your name. So I think that's kind of the same idea, that we can pray to Krishna, always help me remember to remember you, and always help me so I do not forget you. Of course, when you're praying, then you're thinking of Krishna. So I think in that explanation of being dependent on Krishna, there's prayer involved in that also. please, Krishna, give me intelligence, as you're saying here. Help me from within so I can think of you. I think that's really the real key to all aspects of spiritual advancement, just that we want it. We want to do it. Because if you don't want to think of Krishna, you know, Krishna's going to say, bye-bye. You know that story, Krishna. Who knows that story? There was a demon. He was after Krishna. So Krishna said, well, what I will do is I will hide in its heart because he'll never find me there. Who knows which demon that was? Demon was after Krishna. And Krishna hid in his heart because that demon would never find Krishna in his heart. Was it Kamsa? Who knows? I'm forgetting, right? See, because I'm going senile. Was it Jarasandha? Was it Kamsa? Was it... Who was it? Who knows? Nobody knows? What is going on in the Hare Krishna movement? Nobody knows anymore. We're all going senile. So anyway, the point is that Krishna, as himself, Krishna says, I help you remember me or I help you forget me. So I'm sure we've all experienced Krishna's help in helping us remember him, and we've experienced it in helping us forget him. It's very powerful. Maya is very powerful because one of the powers of Maya is to cause us to forget what we know is right. And you know, you hear stories of very elevated devotees falling down, and you think, how can an elevated devotee fall down? It just doesn't make sense. But in order for someone to fall down, they have to be disconnected from what they know, from what they know is right. So disconnected or covered in some way. Which basically is another way of saying they have to forget what is right in order to do what is wrong. Or in some way they have to rationalize what they're doing. Rationalize it enough that the power of anything they know will not infiltrate enough to divert them from what they're doing. So that's an aspect of Krishna taking away one's intelligence or taking away one's memory. And it's scary. Certainly, he can do that very easily. And therefore, knowing that, we pray, Krishna, please don't do that to me. I'm afraid. You know, a devotee is really, a pure devotee, an advanced devotee, is always afraid of forgetting Krishna. In the story of Jai and Vijay, when they were deciding whether they would take 7 births as devotees or 3 births as demons, one of the things that they were considering is that they wanted to get back to their post in Vaikuntha, ASAP. They didn't want to hang and loiter in the material world. So they said, okay, we'll take 3 births as demons. That way we'll get back sooner. And in one of the purports in that chapter, Prabhupada said that, you know, they knew it was going to be difficult being demons, but they really couldn't tolerate being in the material world away from Krishna for 7 births. And so Prabhupada said that, you know, a devotee is tolerant, but he can't tolerate forgetfulness, or he can't tolerate a lack of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, for a devotee, that's the most intolerable thing. So we as devotees pray to Krishna, please help me so I don't forget you. And you know, it's real interesting if you look at Krishna's incarnations and how the spiritual master comes to us and how he instructs us. That Krishna, you could say in a sense, is really going out of his way to get us to think of him. I mean, he descended in this world. Look at tomorrow, Janmashtami. It's a day to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So Krishna comes, he makes this big hullabaloo, his parents are in jail, he takes birth, 4 arms, and he assumes a form as a child, and then he escapes from jail with Vasudeva, and they go to Vrindavan in exchange. Mother Yasoda's baby, with Krishna. It's a whole intrigue. I mean, he could have just appeared. Zip, boom, bang, business finished. But that's not why he appears. He appears to create wonderful pastimes so we can become absorbed in thinking about him. He gives us opportunity to think about him. I mean, how absorbed can you be thinking about God when you don't even know what he does other than being a creator and being a father, and you don't really know what he looks like? So Krishna comes and performs all these pastimes to give us the opportunity to become absorbed in thinking of him. So it's really foolishness on our part to turn away from it, because Krishna's facilitating it. And then Krishna comes as the Nam avatar, because we're not qualified to associate with him personally, so he comes as his name. And then no qualification is necessary. We're too impure to associate with Krishna personally, and that's why it said his name is more powerful or more merciful, because he allows us to associate with him personally in his name, but we cannot associate with him personally otherwise. So that's another incredible way that Krishna is calling us or facilitating us, facilitating our thinking about him in all the instructions of the spiritual master. What are those instructions doing? They're facilitating the process of remembering Krishna through the different practices of bhakti. So, you know, if you think about it, just the whole process of Krishna consciousness is our ways, or the process of Krishna consciousness are various ways of becoming absorbed in thinking of Krishna. And we are expert, somehow or other, we've become expert at forgetting Krishna. We have become expert at becoming absorbed in Maya. How did that happen? It's a habitual turning of the back on Krishna. And so he's kind of surrounding us, you know, everywhere. He's surrounding us. Look, I'm here. Even in the misery, even in the suffering, he'll come and show his face and say, I'm here. Just think of me. That's all I want. Just think of me. I'm always thinking of you. Come on, think of me. I mean, think about it. Krishna wants us back more than we want to go, so he's always thinking of us. So all we have to do is think of him. And going back to Manjesh's question, yes, it's going to require some training, because after many lifetimes in the material world, then we're not habituated to thinking of Krishna. We're, again, as I said, habituated to being in the center and thinking about, what do I want? What don't I want? What do I like? What don't I like? How can I get ahead? How can I avoid suffering? These are constant thoughts on the mind of materialistic people. We're worried about something. We're worried that something bad is going to happen to us. And Mother Yasoda is worried that Krishna will starve. That's the difference. We're worried that we'll starve, and she's worried that Krishna will starve. So that's the platform of love that we want to come to. And so, again, the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And that's why days like Janmashtami are so blissful, because all day we have opportunity to be Krishna conscious. We're surrounded, our temples are having festivals, and there's so much going on all day. And here in Alachua we have a wonderful festival, and if you turn into Alachua Live, you'll be able to get a glimpse of, hopefully, some of the wonderful things that go on here. And just one opportunity after another to think of Krishna. And that's what festivals are for. You know, one time, when I was living in San Diego was called New Govardhan, and the deities, still is called New Govardhan, and the deities there are Radha Giridhari. Giridhari means the lifter of Govardhan, Giri Govardhan. So it was the custom in those days to have a festival in the park, Balboa Park. It's a huge park, and at that time the park was right near the temple. So it was the custom in those days to have a Govardhan festival. And One of the things we would do is we would make gulab jamuns by the bucketful. I mean, when I'm talking trash can buckets, like, you know, buckets that are 4 feet high. And they're filled with sugar juice and gulab jamuns. And so the temple president, what he would like to do is he would go around the festival with bowls of gulab jamuns, and he'd go up to people and he'd stick them in their mouth. He'd say, open your mouth. He'd put a gulab jamun in. So anyway, we would have these festivals every year, and we would tell Prabhupada about them, and Prabhupada would say, oh, festival's wonderful. He would say, did you enjoy the festival? And then he would say, we could have festivals like this every day. And so what's the point of the festival? I mean, really, does Krishna need a festival? He's pretty festive himself. Everything he does is pretty much a festival. Every word he speaks is a festival. Every glance he takes is a festival. How he dresses is festive. How he sings, you know, everything about him is a festival. So he really doesn't need it. But it's an opportunity for us to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So really, this is the goal, and we are meant to understand this is the goal, and we are meant to become absorbed in any way possible. This was really Prabhupada's program. He just wanted all of us to be engaged, and then according to our abilities, according to our inclinations, be engaged in some service that's both satisfying and a challenge to us, so that we would just be absorbed in that service, which would inspire us to be absorbed in our sadhana, which would in turn inspire us to become absorbed in our service. And that was really the program. I mean, if you look at how Prabhupada set up the movement and the schedules that he set up in the temple, it just meant really that we all would become absorbed 24/7 in thinking of Krishna. So now let's go to your chat and see what you've been chatting about. Okay, let's see. Manjesh is asking, this may have been asked before, but what is the best way to remember Krishna in happy times? Well, that would depend upon what's making you happy. Now, if the happiness is spiritual, then I think you're already thinking of Krishna. If the happiness is material, then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, don't get bamboozled, bewildered, overwhelmed by material happiness, because it's not real happiness and it's temporary, and you can get easily bewildered by it. In many ways, we can become bewildered by material happiness. We might just think, hey, the material world's pretty good. Or we may think, hey, I'm pretty good. Or we may think, hey, I'm better than others. Others are suffering. I'm king of the hill here. Or we may just become attached or even addicted to material enjoyment and sense gratification because of the material happiness we're getting. I mean, that's what Prabhupada says about the demigods, doesn't he? Said that because the happiness is so great, they get very attached to it. I mean, that's easy to understand. The greater the pleasure, the more easily we become attached. Anything beautiful, we can become attached to. Anything pleasurable, we can become attached to. So that's why Krishna says something which non-devotees kind of find funny or weird. But Krishna says, tolerate happiness. It's just like if you ask somebody, how are you doing today? And say, well, I had a really rough day. And say, well, what happened? Tell me, what happened? Because things are so good. It's such a difficult time tolerating them. So if you told that to somebody, what would they think? Say, you're crazy. What are you talking about? You don't make any sense. You're tolerating happiness. We enjoy happiness, we don't tolerate it. But Krishna's saying, tolerate happiness, because it can confuse you, can bewilder you, can divert you. So, and the best way to remember Krishna is that you thank Krishna. Krishna sent you something good. Thank you, Krishna. And that should inspire you. Krishna, you're so kind and to give me this, and I'm inspired to serve you even more. Prabhupada says that also. He said sometimes a devotee will pray for something, although a devotee really shouldn't pray for anything material, but he might, and Krishna will give it to the devotee, and the devotee will be thankful and say, thank you, Krishna, for giving me this. I needed this, and become more I don't know if inspired is the word, but say motivated to serve Krishna out of gratitude. Okay. Manjesh says, a lot of times at difficulty, or when we're in difficulty, I think you mean, we find some outlet to our problem, but unfortunately, sometimes not Krishna. Yes. So, as devotees, we should try to find Krishna-conscious solutions to all our problems. Perhaps you don't know a Krishna-conscious solution. Of course, sometimes any solution that helps you come closer to Krishna, you could label it broadly a Krishna-conscious solution. So you want to make a solution that brings you to Krishna, better make a solution that's based on Krishna-conscious principles. But sometimes solutions may be based on the mode of ignorance, or it may be based on some kind of practical common sense understanding, or some kind of counseling or direction you need. But anything that can help you overcome obstacles on the path of bhakti is useful, although overcoming them through bhakti is better. But still, even if you overcome a problem through another way, which is not sinful, and most likely it'll be something to do with the mode of goodness, and then still that can help you, clear out the obstacles to your bhakti. Okay. Spiritual sky has descended upon us. Yes, for us in Alatra, Janmashtami is tomorrow. Starts at midnight. Well, we celebrate Janmashtami the entire day, but it is at midnight when Krishna appeared. So we have arti at midnight. And chanting and dancing is with us. And speaking of chanting and dancing, tomorrow at 10, I'm going to chant Brahma Samhita in the temple. So maybe that will be on the Alachua Live, 10 a.m. So it's going to be special by your mercy. So if you'd like to watch, that would be nice. And Janmashtami means fasting all day till midnight. These days, a lot of devotees don't fast. I don't know why. But in Prabhupada's day, everyone fasted. And we stay up till midnight, and then midnight is the arti. And the feast is supposed to be no grains. And then we fast. The next day, it's Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja celebration. We fast till noon. And Prabhupada said, if you can't fast, take milk and fruit. And then you can break fast in the after the midnight arti. Best not to eat grains. I don't know what all temple policies are, but actually the standard is not to eat grains. Do they serve grains here? Do you remember? Yeah, they shouldn't. Tell them they shouldn't serve grains. Okay. Thursday in India is Wednesday in America. Okay. Yes, eating heavy after fasting is bad for health. That is a problem. Better you eat light, but the problem at the temple is there's a big feast. And there's not light prasadam. And if there was light prasadam, everybody would complain. So they make a feast. And all that mahaprasadam is offered all during the day. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard this story. I'll tell you a story now that we're thinking of prasadam and we're talking about thinking of Krishna. There was a devotee who's no longer with us. His name was Vishnu Jan Swami. And whenever Maha would come off the altar and he would see it, he would pay obeisances to the Maha. So that's another way of thinking of Krishna, right? When you see Maha, then it's Krishna's Maha, and then you're supposed to think of Krishna. And Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Maha, the prasadam that Krishna's eaten, has Krishna's saliva in it. So then you think, here's Maha prasadam with Krishna's saliva. How nice. So that should remind you of Krishna. What else reminds us of Krishna? Well, a devotee reminds you of Krishna. Perhaps more than anything, a devotee reminds you of Krishna. Isn't it funny? You can be in front of the deities and not be thinking of Krishna. So even sometimes Krishna can't remind you of Krishna. Oh, we're pretty fallen. Even we're chanting the holy name, that we may not be thinking of Krishna. So even Krishna sometimes can't remind us of Krishna. But the devotee, they remind us of Krishna. And Prabhupada said, I think it was Mahaprabhu who said, when he was asked, well, what is a devotee? So one who reminds you of Krishna is a devotee. So the most powerful way of remembering Krishna is sadhu sangha and satsanga, associating with great sadhus and associating with devotees. They remind us of Krishna. Why do they remind us of Krishna? Because they're engaged in Krishna's service and they're talking about Krishna. They're trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. On our own, it would be very difficult to always remember Krishna. So I don't know if you've experienced that, but sometimes you can be grossly affected by the modes of nature, and then you just come in the association of devotees, and then immediately you're transformed. Another way of remembering Krishna, Prabhupada said, if you hear about Krishna, if you attend classes, he said, while you're hearing, then you're absorbed. At least in the mode of goodness. But ideally, if you're absorbed in hearing about Krishna, then your mind's absorbed. So this, you know, this whole idea, absorb your mind and then there won't be any room left in your mind for anything else. That was Prabhupada's whole idea. You know, he knew what our minds were full of. So he was thinking, okay, let's fill their minds with Krishna and all that garbage will just get pushed out. But I'll give you an example. I used to give this example because when I was younger, we used to distribute books in parking lots. And I remember that during Christmas, especially a few days before Christmas, all the parking lots were very, very crowded. You know, when you go to a mall at Christmas time, you usually have to park far, far away, and all the spots close are all full. And if by chance a car leaves a spot that's close, what happens within the next 10 seconds? Another car is going to come right up, right? So when I was distributing books, whenever I would see an empty parking space that was close to the mall or to the store, I would just run up to that space because I knew within the next few seconds a car was going to pull up. And car always pulled up. So when we were doing Sankirtan like this, distributing books, I would tell the other devotees, I said, yes, the mind is like that. As soon as there's some vacancy, some empty spot, Maya will walk in. You know, as soon as there's a spot, Maya's going to come in. So if you look at Prabhupada's instructions in this way, that he was just trying to fill our days and minds with Krishna somehow or other, then as you read his instructions, you'll see, yeah, it all follows this theme. It all makes sense. If you put it under this umbrella, it will all be cohesive, and that we're just trying to fill our minds up with Krishna. Otherwise, when we leave space, what do we leave space for? All kinds of things, crazy things. I think that's another reason, not that I think I know, that's another reason which Prabhupada said 16 rounds minimum. Why did he say minimum? Because he knew that some of us are going to have time on our hands. Some of us don't have time. Like we can barely get 16 rounds done. I still have about 3.5 rounds left. And I was, you know, chanting all morning, and I started my work at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I worked right up till 7 o'clock and had dinner and came over here. So sometimes it's like that, and I was up for Mangalartik. So sometimes it's hard even to get the rounds done, because I had to come back and get my daughter, and so I had to stop chanting a little bit sooner than normal. So, but on the other side of that, sometimes we have time on our hands. And what do? When we have our time on our hands, oh, let's listen to the radio, let's watch television, let's read some stupid novel or something. You know, we have all this time on our hands. So, I mean, maybe some of you don't, but when we do, Prabhupada's idea was, okay, chant more. Don't just waste your time. Chant more rounds. You know, what do we say? Don't just stand there. Do something. So that was kind of the idea, you know. Don't just stand there zoning out in oblivion. Or, you know, do some service or chant Hare Krishna. So that was really Prabhupada's point when he said 16 rounds minimum. That's just like, okay, that will keep you out of trouble. 16 rounds will keep you out of trouble. But if you have more time in your hands, then you have a chance you're going to get more trouble. So chant more. Always be engaged. Krishna, 24/7, Krishna consciousness. Time you get up to the time you go to bed. So that was really Prabhupada's program. And that was how we could always think of Krishna. That was his always think of Krishna program. And never forget Krishna. Okay. So, of course, another great way to think of Krishna is to chant and dance. Right? I'll tell you a story and we'll end here. You like stories, right? Keep you all awake, and this story will even keep me awake because the rate I'm going, I could fall asleep while I'm talking. And I've heard devotees have done that. In fact, a devotee just told me a story. Not only did everyone in the class fall asleep, the speaker himself fell asleep. And then the devotee walked into the temple during Bhagavatam class, and there was no Bhagavatam class because everyone had nodded out. So anything is possible in Krishna consciousness, because devotees are very powerful. They can even fall asleep while they're talking. Actually, my daughter, when she was young, once fell asleep while she was eating. I had never seen anybody do that. I always see that people wake up when they're tired, when they start eating. She was so tired, she actually fell asleep. And then she woke up from her, you know, she was actually down for like 10 minutes. She nodded out in the car. And as soon as she woke up, she started eating again. She didn't realize she'd fallen asleep. So, in about 1978, I was in charge of the Sankirtan men, Sankirtan book distributors in Los Angeles. I don't know, there were like 25 men. Maybe 18 were brahmacharis or 20 were brahmacharis living in the ashram. And so when you have that many single men in the temple and they're all doing a powerful service like book distribution, you generally find that the kirtans are very powerful and very inspiring because they need that energy to go out and distribute books, and they get energy from doing their book distribution, so they bring that back into the kirtan. So the kirtans were very inspiring, and one morning we had an especially nice kirtan after the Guru Puja. After Guru Puja, we had a very ecstatic kirtan, and those of you who are older probably noticed that younger devotees, if they want, they can dance and jump around for like an hour straight and not even get tired, where those who are older, who are not in really tip-top shape, who are not running every day 5 miles and going to the gym and working out for 2 hours, they would have a hard time dancing at full energy for more than 5 or 10 or 15 minutes. So we had one of those kirtans, we were all in our 20s, where we just go and go and go, and after we finish going, we go some more, and just really high speed. And after that kirtan, a devotee came up to me and he said, "Thank you that," he said. "I was really battling with my mind this morning, and that kirtan really helped me get over it." So kirtan is a powerful way of absorbing ourselves in Krishna. So we can give our whole body, not only our minds, but our whole body. We can give all our energy to it. So, we'll get some final comments here by Anushka Patel. "Where will we find Janmasthami and Krishna's death?" Oh. You find Janmasthami in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In Krishna's death, Prabhupada said, devotees don't like talking about it. I believe it's in the 3rd canto. Devotees don't really like talking about it. Of course, he doesn't die. He feigns dying. But Janmasthami is the 10th canto. I don't know the chapter. But probably the chapter is entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna, or you'll find that in the Krishna book. And both of those are available online, is that correct? You can access them on Krishna.com. All of Srila Prabhupada's books can be accessed on Krishna.com. And what was, there's one more question around there. He's going to give you a site. Yeah, there's the, there you go. That's the link. And then you can find all of Srila Prabhupada's books there and probably read the Krishna book. It's just written as a story in the Krishna book. Unless you're into Sanskrit and word for words and reading the purports and so on to each verse, you can do that also. You'll find that in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so so Manjesh is saying that he's thanking me for helping him think of Krishna throughout class. And thank you, you're welcome. And I was helping myself think of Krishna by helping you think of Krishna. And perhaps tomorrow we can all have a very absorbing Krishna Janmashtami, and we can make it a point of being Krishna conscious throughout the day, and we can put all of these into practice. And thank you, and we want to get up early tomorrow because we all want to be at Mangal Aarti, because tomorrow's an auspicious day. And Prabhupada said if you go to Mangal, which means auspicious, your day will be auspicious. So everyone get to bed early. We'll see you at Mangal Aarti, and Hare Krishna.